Hello and welcome to Inwood Book Club, the show where recently at periodic intervals we have taken a book about sales and discussed and reviewed it.
Yes.
This month we're back now after a summer break because nobody listens to podcasts during the summer, and we are doing Naked Sales by Ashley Welsh and Justin Jones.
We certainly are.
It was recommended to us by Rob Taylor.
Who's top guy?
Who is a top bloke.
With a very good career.
Good career, good sales leader. Interestingly, works in the Salesforce ecosystem, which, as we will discover as the book goes on, this book is very Salesforce-y, isn't it?
It's their only reference.
It's an interesting one. So let's begin. I've been using, I'm just on a new book reading thing here, which I think is
quite
useful.
Is it called Kindle?
So I'm using the Kindle app
on the
iPad. And then what I'm using is the highlighting functionality.
I always use that.
In the Kindle.
I've been using that for years.
And then what you can do is you can get all the annotations and notes along the highlights.
I know.
I love it.
I'm really surprised. There's been two instances recently. One was something with LinkedIn. And with that...
Oh, no, but I've got... If you go into my Readwise account, Pricey, I've got... Do you know I've got 4,500 highlights from over 300 books in my Readwise account?
God, I bet that's fascinating. So... This book, I thought it started like an absolute house on fire, actually.
Yeah, how so?
Because he's talking about this Salesforce salesperson, which they're all Salesforce salespeople,
yep.
Who wants to get into Greyhound, the bus company, as an account. And it says that, I mean, I'm summarising this very briefly, really, but he sort of says most salespeople read the company accounts, read the chairperson's statement, and all that kind of stuff. And they'll make an approach to a C-level exec based on the information they would find on the internet. And what this guy's saying is, they're saying that what this guy did was, he actually used a Greyhound bus and he was a user of it.
Love it.
And he stopped along the way and he was talking to the driver about how the driver used a tablet to upload the information. And
but the tablet was slow.
Yeah.
So he's actually writing the manifest down on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Because the tablet wasn't working very quickly. And then he's got to the presentation and he's pitched them.
And he's taken pictures along the way to provide evidence. What he's done is he's truly tried to understand the prospect that he's selling to, truly tried to understand where their problems are, how that's stopping them engaging with their clients who pay their money, and say, listen, you've got all these things that are causing you loads of problems where actually you're sort of losing money and you're providing bad customer satisfaction. And actually, if you did these things with our technology, it'd solve your problem.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is... What's really interesting about this is sales training that I got. I'm 51. I got when I was 23 at Parcelforce, which is, who is your customer's customer? And what do they think?
Yes.
And that's kind of what the book's about. And it's interestingly, 27 years later... They talk about this customer centricity, and it's not actually about being customer centric. It's about being customer centric.
Yes.
And actually asking yourself, what's the journey of your customer's customer and what's that mean? Now, what's been really interesting about this book is I read the whole thing last night.
It's an airport read while you're waiting for a plane.
Yes.
And I'm not knocking that in any way.
And what's been fascinating about this is you and I are going through a very interesting journey as customers at the moment.
Yes.
With software.
I could have talked about that.
With software suppliers.
It's been amazing dealing with salespeople selling to us.
And we're making what could be an absolute open heart surgery procurement on the business. This isn't a couple hundred quid a month.
It's a completely changing our business system.
Yeah, it's an enormous, enormous potential transformation for us. And so I've been reading this book last night through the lens of our experiences with those salespeople. And what's really interesting is how they talk about this whole thing of they go online, they look on the website, like you say.
Yeah.
And it gets worse than that, because I think with a lot of automation now, there's, oh, well, I've looked at the intent data on Zoom and I've looked at their tech stack on Zoom.
Yeah.
And the technology's
I've looked at the growth or lack of it or whatever.
And the technology's making them lazy.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Inadvertently lazy. They're working hard, but it's making them superficial and lazy in their understanding of the customer.
And I agree with you completely. And what is interesting about that is we met three salespeople. We met probably five salespeople from three companies yesterday.
Yeah.
Not one of those companies tried to engage with us as a candidate, just as a test.
No.
Not one of them tried to onboard with us. Not one of them tried to give us a brief. Or...
No, because they've all assumed we're just dickhead recruitment consultants.
They have, but the point being is, if they'd done that, if they tried to register as a candidate or thought about one of our job casts or done any form of engagement with us, I think their pitch would have been different.
Completely. And that's what I was thinking about a lot last night was, I wonder, particularly we saw one supplier whose product appeared to be, in reality, a framework for what would be an enormous bespoke development project.
Yeah, exactly.
But what they hadn't done was look at actually our business. I was thinking about it in the car on the way here. Their comprehension of our business was just minuscule.
Which is
even
amazing.
After, and you know, you've seen the document I've written.
And we gave them an hour. They just grilled us for another hour. All they did was ask us questions, which we very honestly answered.
Yeah, and they've had an hour to ask us, but they still didn't have their heads around it at all.
And what they're referring to here, the phrase they use is design thinking.
Yes.
Now, actually, I put on this page, this is page 28, 29 in the actual physical book. At this point, I like the book. I'm thinking, this is a great idea.
Well, I've written here, no, page 12. They give an example of this guy, Sachin, who's the sales guy. He worked at Salesforce, interestingly. And he's won this big deal with Greyhound buses in San Francisco. And I've written, fair play, Sachin. That's proper salesmanship, that is.
Yeah, he's excellent. And I hope it's true. And
I hope so. And on page 13, I've gone, on page 13 here, he shifted his perspective from salesperson to customer, and I've written, you've got my attention here now.
Yeah, well, I'm like it. I thought it was
sell by design process. So I really like that.
It did get me thinking with some of the feedback we give to our clients about their process. So if they're too slow with the candidates or whatever, we could maybe... sort of formalize that a little bit more with stats and stuff like that.
Well, it made me think about getting clients to think more about what's the candidate experience.
And how long have we been trying to brief candidates so they don't listen to us? Very few actually.
How often do candidates think about what's the interviewer experience?
Rarely. And we tell
them. They only think about their own experience.
Rarely. And we tell them to do that.
They are only thinking about their own experience. They're not thinking about. What it made me realize was, and what it's really got me thinking about is, how weak some of the salespeople we work with are.
They're terrible, some of them.
Yeah.
I mean, he says here, start of chapter 2, when we sell, we're trying to solve a client's problem, ideally with an innovative solution. I've put very few are. I think very few are.
Yeah.
Let's get it right, Johnny. We're a Salesforce user. Do they come to us with innovative solutions trying to solve our problems?
No.
Now, maybe we should be dealing with Sachin, but we're not big enough to deal with Sachin.
Well,
and maybe Sachin would be innovative.
Salesforce is a very interesting case in point. There's a real irony here, and I'll get to it on the last page of the book. There's a couple of immense ironies in the book, but he makes a very interesting point. And Salesforce are our incumbent supplier here, and we've had a disastrous modular procurement with Salesforce that sparked a potential transformation for us. And what was really interesting and what's emerged from that is how little they've really understood us.
Or bothered trying.
And there's a quote in the book. It says, under the pressure to perform, our seemingly successful habits can turn us into revenue drones. We're good at spotting things from a distance, but we're still missing what's important on the ground. As such, we kill the creativity required in a disruptive market. And where I've seen that is that pressure, particularly in the guys we work with at Salesforce, the pressure is monumental on them.
I think
so,
yeah.
And it's turned them into bad salesmen. Because terrible commission breath and an enormous pressure to move shit through a forecast to keep somebody quiet.
I agree. Now, what I would say about this book, actually, and I put this on page 39 for me, is it becomes very apparent that if you're a product seller, and if you sell compliance software, it's a solution, Mike. Or if you sell hosting, it's a solution, Mike. But if you're a product seller that sells a product to do something, this is just an interesting read. You won't learn a great deal. But if you, for example, you're selling big transformation solutions, then this is probably more relevant, I think.
Yes,
really.
I've written later on in the book, I think it's much more attuned to an enterprise-level sale. There's a great quote here. We recently spoke with one of our participants from Highland Software who said he had 25 different clients in the same industry. They've all got similar needs, so he can go in without much research and sell them all the same thing. Most of the industry groups use the same software. Easy peasy. And I thought I was a real... Some of it's very subtle in this book, and I've written here, it's so easy to do, to assume that you know the customers and assume that you get it. And you see that in guys that know verticals.
Yeah.
And actually, you see it in guys who are working, you know, I often say about the people in the healthcare market, because they've stayed in that single vertical for so long.
Yes.
And they've become so expert at it.
They know the answer to the question they're going to ask before they walk in.
Correct. They think they know all the problems instead of actually, and it's fascinating, isn't it? How many of them actually sit down and go, I wonder what it's like to be a patient. Now, I'll tell you a very interesting story about somebody who I know very closely who does do a lot of that. I wonder what it's like to be a patient.
Yes.
In that market. And she makes a lot of money.
What's interesting here, she talks about, I say she, because I think the majority of the book is actually written by Ashley, from which the way it's written, really.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And I've looked at both profiles on LinkedIn. She says, they're talking about starting, enter every interaction with the assumption that you don't understand the problem. Don't know about that, really. I think there's some sense in it, but I think quite often people will go to salespeople hoping that the salesperson has some experience of understanding the problem that they're encountering.
I don't agree. I think there's a humility aspect of being able to walk into a meeting with a client and say, look, I've got lots of customers in this market space,
yeah,
and I think I know what most of their problems are. But what I'd feel terrible doing today is walking here, making a boatload of assumptions about your company. What I'd prefer to do is to pretend I know nothing, even though I know loads. And actually, I'd look to start and pretend I don't understand your company at all and understand it from there, because I bet you do stuff differently to everyone else, which I think is actually you would build a lot of rapport doing that. Whereas, interestingly, in Challenger, and they talk about that later in the book, comparing themselves to Challenger as a model.
Yeah, yeah.
What they're saying is, in Challenger, the idea being is you walk into the client with generalist insights about the market space.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
They're saying is you walk into your customer with completely blank slate saying, look, I could make a shitload of assumptions here, but that would be really poor on my part.
I put a note here on page 61. Passion.
Cool, you're flying through this, Price.
Well, we're going to keep this a quick one, aren't we? Passion. Practice noticing passion.
What's your problem with that?
I think that's so insincere. I really do.
What page are you on? I mean, you're absolutely flying through. Aren't
yeah,
you?
I mean, I found the book got a little bit boring, really, but it did. The first 30 pages were the best bit. If they'd taken the first 30 pages...
Well, like a lot of these books.
They should have just taken the first 30 pages with this design thinking idea and built that out. The way it's built out in the back of the book is rubbish. But
we haven't really gone into their paradigm of design thinking here, have we?
Well, go on. Let's talk about that if you want. Let's go back a load of pages.
They break it. The book goes through key elements of explaining use design thinking. You've got the diagram there in front of you, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah.
And what are the key phases?
They're talking about discovery, insight, and then accelerate is what they're talking about.
Yeah, and then they break down how to do... It's a slightly different paradigm of doing discovery, isn't it?
It is, but I mean, if you were ranking ways of doing discovery out of different books and you compared this to Spin Selling as an example or anything like that, their discovery bit's garbage.
Do you think?
I think their discovery bit with Sachin getting on the Greyhound bus, brilliant.
Absolutely awesome.
Super.
You're getting on the Greyhound bus, you're selling to Tesco's, actually pitching up at Tesco's, you're selling to Starbucks, turning up at Starbucks at 10 o'clock at night.
Well, they've got that as an example, haven't they, about how they've got loads of different things on the milk register or whatever.
And actually, getting talking to the manager of a Starbucks and realizing Starbucks isn't in the coffee business, it's in the milk management business.
Yeah, all that. I agree.
It's discovery, isn't it? And then being able to turn up at a meeting with Starbucks and say, I've learned something about Starbucks. You're not really in the coffee business. You're in the business of managing milk volume. And the client sat there going, right, now I'm talking to somebody who's got their head around it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I do agree with that. I agree with
anything else.
Feet on the ground. So a point clear. Feet on the ground, understanding the process. Yeah, 100%. Absolutely superb.
But for me, and I think the reason you've not quite gelled with this book, and we'll go back to it in a minute, is that it's only applicable if you're doing a big enterprise level sale.
It's only
and as a model, that kind of thinking is not scalable. And the majority of...
Well, there is no model. There's a vanilla layer of a model. But if you're going to do that...
You can't scale. You look at the lad... You look at the lad that we're dealing with at HubSpot.
Yeah.
He can't do that.
But in case he's listening, he's a good lad. Like him.
He's the best salesman of the ones we've dealt with.
Definitely. No doubt about it.
Absolute class act. He has swallowed his training manual. Hook, line and sinker.
Yeah.
Thought a very professional. Listens carefully.
Follows up.
But just bang on.
Yeah.
But he can't, because he's inside, in reality, he's a bit higher level than a BDR, isn't he?
He's an inside sales guy.
Yeah, he's an account exec, but in reality, I doubt he ever gets in a car or on a plane.
Yeah, yeah.
The model, I think, of a lot of modern software SaaS companies is killing that quality of salesmanship.
Well, that's my point. You know, they're selling product.
Yeah, because the quest to process more customers. And I thought about this in the context, this whole concept of our... I thought about this as to how it applies to us as recruitment consultants, Mike.
Yep.
So we could do discovery with candidates and clients.
Yep.
Right? But if we did that discovery, we'd go bankrupt. Why? Because for every hour and a half long interview we do with a candidate, which we used to do, and I'd love to do, and I terribly, deeply miss doing, for every detailed interview where I psychologically got into the soul of a candidate, another recruiter has put an ad on LinkedIn, had 15 people go, yeah, that sounds interesting, not qualified whether they're actually looking for jobs or not, just asked them for a CV, fired the CVs over to the client, who said, I'll interview those five, of which three have agreed to actually pitch up at an interview, of which one has actually been offered a job and possibly accepted it.
Yeah, yeah. And there's us stroking our ties.
And there's us, let me interview you for an hour and a half and really, truly understand.
Do the candidates want that? Nope. Candidates just want a long list of jobs.
Well.
By and large, some don't.
Yeah.
But the vast majority, who are you working with?
And that affects us because of the speed at which people can do business, the speed at which one of our recruitment competitors can just fire CVs over to a client and harvest them out of the candidate pool. And it's the same in the software space.
Well, we met a supplier yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday. And let's get it right. Their system is brilliant at firing out emails.
Amazing that.
They use a system where you can send 3,000 emails, bang.
Really fast.
It's designed to do that.
Yeah, it's designed for just... It's not designed for...
But then we're not trying to sell £4 million deals from Salesforce to Greyhound.
No, but we are trying to place salespeople who make £4 million.
We are, yeah.
For Greyhound. It's just as mission critical as procurement.
It definitely is, but our sales process and cycle is different.
Correct. And I think, but the point I'm getting at is this design thinking approach to selling is brilliant if you work at...
If you worked at Fujitsu or DXC or...
Yes, if you worked at... I don't know, Cerner, and you're selling £12 million EPR systems, then, God damn it, you best push yourself off a wall, turn up at A&E and see what happens and be able to report back to your client. But actually, if you're flogging CRM software for 20 grand and you've got a number and a boss breathing down your neck for your number and you are transacting with lots of people all day, you really got time to think, do you know what? I'm going to create a fake CV and I'm going to create a fake LinkedIn profile and I'm just going to do a little, I'm just going to see what it's like to be an inward candidate.
Yeah, I agree. I'm on the same page with it.
Have you, hell? You just haven't, have you?
I'm on the same page with it.
And I think that a lot of that is driven by a lot of, ironically, we read the Tony Hughes book, Tech Powered Sales.
Brilliant. A superb book, by the way.
Which,
read it.
Interestingly, now that we're doing a lot of this discovery around technology, is horribly dated.
Well, it was always going to date quickly because when we read it 2 years ago.
It does actually allude to the fact that it's going to horribly date.
Yeah, I thought it was an excellent book. Of the moment which we read it, it was amazing.
Yeah, but that tech-powered sales stack kills this.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Do you want, you know, if you're Salesforce, do you want one salesperson who's trying to close a £4 million deal that might close, might not? Or do you want five salespeople that are cheaper each trying to close 800 grand deals? You know what you should go for.
Correct.
You know, if you're making a percentage play.
So what page are you on? I'm on page 40 now, Mike.
Okay, I'm on page 82. I still think this is an hour's worth of a show.
Really?
But don't get me wrong.
The quality of your curiosity they talk about.
You see, all right, so quality of your curiosity. Let's pick up on that. How many salespeople do we meet who are well-trained enough to have a good, curious mindset with it, with good enough language that they can open up a client? Not many of them.
Well, how many salespeople do we meet? I'm just going to make sure I've understood your question. How many salespeople do we meet who've got that level of curiosity about their customers?
And that level of conversational power.
That skill.
Yeah. Because to get somebody to open up, to get to that level of conversational power, to be that curious, you've got to be pretty good. This whole notion of turning up and saying, what's your biggest problem? You're out the door, aren't you? To actually... if you...
What keeps you up at night?
Yeah, nothing. Bye.
So that's my point
about that, is the underpinning of being able to actually do that, you've got to be pretty well trained to do that. You know, could Richard Bandler do it? Yeah.
What this book made me realise is how badly trained a lot of the people we're interacting with are.
But it doesn't matter.
Because they don't care, because the software's churning out that much volume.
You know.
They're interacting with that many people that often that something's dropping through.
And let's be clear, we're saying that we deal with... I've got a client that I'm going to see tomorrow who has got 70% of their sales reps on 170% of target.
Fair play.
Do they need this book? No.
No, they just need more bodies. Yeah. They've obviously got a well-designed, well-created offering. And that's, I think, the fundamental irony of a lot of sales jobs now is a lot of the companies have got... for example, that client's in the channel.
They're a VAR.
They're a VAR. I mean, it doesn't get more bloody me too, does it?
No.
But they've obviously found some way of presenting their offering in a way that gels with customers, and providing they get enough volume of pitches in front of customers, the customers are going, yeah, we like your story.
We'll buy it.
Yeah. And that's not salespeople doing customer investigation, is it?
No. They
are sending more troops over the top so they can get more market share. So at some point they can flog it to CDW.
Let's get the definition of salesperson, successful salesperson. 80% of target or more.
Is that your definition?
Yeah.
80% at the end of the year or more?
Yeah. I think if you said to a client, I've got a salesperson, I can guarantee they're going to be 80% of target, that client would hire that salesperson.
That's an interesting conversation, isn't it? What's your candidate like? Yeah, he's all right. I guarantee he'll get over 80% next year. Oh, I want a guy who's going to be 140% of target.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
So I had a client interview a candidate yesterday. Candidate pretty much works for direct competitor. Very close. Candidate is very quiet. Client goes, candidate's very quiet, Mike. I say, why do you care? Client goes, well, just very quiet. I say, yeah, but that candidate worked for your direct competitor, has worked there for 5 years, has got P60s to show that they've been there or thereabouts to target.
He sells stuff to someone.
So why do you care that they're quiet? Who cares?
Yeah.
We're getting off tangent for the...
We are a little bit. I just want to talk about something on page 52, Mike. I'm going to pull you back a bit. I'm going to rein you in. It says here, it's a trap for all of us in sales, this going through the motions thing, because it leads to mind-numbing monotony, even burnout. It's a trap for our clients because even though they might be happy with our quick solutions, we haven't helped them see other possibilities that could help them accomplish even more. It's also a trap for our employers because we're either leaving opportunity on the table, also a bummer for us in terms of lost commission, or we're inviting the competition to come in and go further, or most likely both. And I like that point about a monotony and how salespeople are going through the motion. The question is, how does a salesperson keep it fresh? You know, we meet guys who have been in jobs for 5, 6, 7 years, where they must be getting monotonous with it, where they must be going through the motions. Should they move jobs? Should they do
training? What's
the problem
with going through the monotony of sales if you hit a target every year? What's the problem with that?
Nothing at all. Who cares if it's monotonous?
Who cares? Oh, it's really boring. They say 150 grand every year. It's right though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I find the word, I'll use the word, is snobby, a lot of these sales writers. Oh, look at the monotony of your job. Yeah, I earn 150 grand a year. It's on rails. I know exactly what I'm doing. What's your issue?
I don't even have to think about it that much.
Yeah, I'm sat looking at BBC Sport because I'm on Teams and I'm talking away and they buy stuff and we sell stuff and they're happy. Which problem?
Yeah, just go and have your midlife crisis somewhere else and keep earning your money.
But I get your point. Your point is, how do you keep fresh? How do you keep fresh really in anything? It is by reading stuff like this and getting involved with books and changing jobs. You know, changing jobs is a good way to keep fresh, isn't it?
We see that, don't we? People change. Actually, when you look at it, it's that monotony of the same old pitch, same old conversation.
There are very few. You know, quite often, why are you looking for a job? Oh, I've just got bored of doing what I'm doing, the monotony of it, whatever. Of 10 people that say that, only one mean it. The other 9 are just going to miss target, so they're changing jobs.
Correct, but are they missing target because they've got into that rut of monotony?
It's a good point. It's a philosophical one, isn't it? So you're saying, is their rut of monotony creating their lack of success?
Yes. Where they start to underperform because actually, without realising it, they're doing the same old shit day in, day out. You look at some of these guys in the channel, the way they manage, they win, they get there.
Win Asda and manage it.
They get there and they're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, aren't they, when they first turn up. And they go out and they speak to some IT manager at Asda and actually they're pretty bright about it and they find a problem that no one else has found. Before they know it, they've won a 50 grand a year managed service and over a period of time, that IT manager gets promoted and ends up in a senior leadership role in the IT team at Asda. And before they know it, they're running 4 million quid a year out of Asda.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I reckon that
one. And they end up winning another account and they sit on those accounts for 11 years. You see that a lot in the channel, don't you? Where actually, over that period of time, they become less and less of a salesperson, even though actually they're earning £200,000. Then one morning, DXC pile in and win a global deal
with bought by Morrisons or
yeah, win a global deal with Walmart. They wake up without an account, and their boss says, "Where's your 4 million quid coming from this year? Because you're now on a £120,000 base." And they end up actually, what you realise is that they've just completely rusted out over a period of time.
They have. I just don't know. Is that a problem? You know, did Lionel Messi? You know, was it monotonous for him?
Is it boring banging goals in
for Barcelona? Yeah.
Boring. Erling Haaland bored with banging goals in for City.
And that's sort of my point about, but I get your point. How, you know, how do you stay fresh and should you change? It's a book club show in its own right, isn't it? I guess, really. So, I mean, I'll go right to the end if you want. I folded over a lot more pages, though.
Have you? Let's look. So we talked about passion.
I mean, you know, chapter 4 is phase 2. They're talking about insight. I mean, the bit I highlighted first of is many of us, this is page 81. Many of us don't reflect enough on our discovery before we shift into full-on sale mode. I mean, I think that's very true. I think our interaction with software companies, only really one of them has reflected on the discovery before they shifted into full-on pitch mode. Now, what is interesting is we met a software company yesterday who read your briefing document and then created a demo based on your briefing document.
They were the most closely aligned to understanding the brief.
And actually, their demo was the best demo, wasn't it? We'll discuss it offline later. But
it was definitely the most professional demo.
Yeah, that's what I mean. In terms of demo, you think, yeah, that was...
Yeah. It was really... I mean, you and I have demoed software back in the day.
Yes.
What I realised was how shit some of them are at demoing software.
Yeah, particularly they're trying to sell a CRM software that they use. And you're a bit
wow.
Yes, I agree. But let's talk about discovery.
I can really see why Rob likes this book.
Yes, I'm not saying it's a bad book. I'm just saying...
Because if you look at what Rob does, yes, which is huge services solutions around Salesforce ecosystem, the whole book, that whole cell is about profound understanding.
Yes, I agree.
And the differentiator is an insight that another supplier hasn't got.
I agree.
I guess. So I think they make a couple of really good points. In the last show, I made a point about being on client site means that you clock stuff that you don't clock when you're...
Why do you think I'm going tomorrow? This client, they've signed my terms. They've got a headcount for 8 salespeople. They're a really...
Well, you're going to be in love with them tomorrow, aren't you? You're going to come back from that appointment tomorrow and you're going on your holidays on Friday. And you're going to ring me on the way back from the appointment. You're going to go, JG, this is the one. This is the boy. This is our gravy train for the next few months.
Yes. But I'm going to learn stuff about that. Just been sat in reception, actually.
And you'll be more excited and more... and they've used the word passion. You'll develop a passion for the client because you were on the
side. You know, who are one of my top clients that I do loads of work with, who I love and I will quote, is A&S.
But you get time, you get FaceTime on site there.
I get FaceTime on site, but, you know, A&S and me, we're sort of joined at the hip almost. Like, I reckon I could work there and sell their stuff and I'd be the top of the leaderboard. Sorry, James Pollard, but I reckon I'd beat you. But point being is, because I've got a good empathy and understanding with them, that comes across in terms of passion.
Yes, it does. But what's really interesting is actually this, it's what I'm, and I'm just thinking aloud here, there's almost like a passion discovery loop, isn't there?
Yes. The more you discover, the more passionate you get. And,
yes.
And it fulfills itself.
Right? That ability to get FaceTime with the client gives you an understanding of the client, which gives you a passion for the client and a passion for solving
their
problems.
Well, going back to Satchel.
Because we all want to come up with a solution that nobody else has come up with. We all want to help.
I don't.
No, but we all want to do a great job for our clients.
Yeah, I want to do a top job for the clients.
We all want to do... I don't believe there's a salesman out there that doesn't actually really care about doing a top job for his client. That doesn't actually care about whether the client gets a benefit from what they've bought.
Oh, I think there's plenty don't, Johnny.
Do you really think that?
Yeah, 100%. I know it's a very cynical thing to say, but I think there's lots of... Why are you leaving Massive Software Company X? Oh, I just closed a big deal with Amazon. Right, okay. Why don't you stick around? Yeah, I don't think there's much more revenue in that.
Because I've sold
brackets, and I need to run off now.
I need to run off before someone realises I've completely oversold.
Someone
realises I've completely oversold the promise, and it's all going to emerge, but I've got my commission and I need to get the hell out of here.
Now, I'm sure
that what you're saying?
Yeah, now I'm sure there are some people who really do genuinely care about their clients. I really do care that the clients get it right.
Yeah.
100%, that's really important to me.
I'd be gutted if I looked back on my career on my deathbed and thought, oh, yeah, that was a life well spent, placing loads of shit salespeople with loads of shit clients and none of them ever really sold anything. That would be a kind of heartbreaking way to meet your maker, wouldn't it?
Yeah, probably. But anyway, we're off the tangent of passion, I think, as you were talking about it.
Yeah. There's some really great... I think you've done this book down a bit pricey.
Okay, then. What's your next point?
There's lots of little bits. For example, they talk about here, you build more rapport through curiosity.
But my point is, only if you're good at doing that. So we use the example, kids, they're curious, they're good.
And that's why kids are sweet and charming, because they're curious.
Because they actually really want to know. So my little one, Felicity, everyone calls her Liz. Liz is reading the training manual I have written on the ERP market. And I've based the training manual around BMW using ERP software. She goes to me, she goes, yeah, you can test her on it.
I know. And like, I've been writing the documentation with you.
And she goes, the other day she goes, you know supply chain software for BMW? I went, yeah, yeah. She said, how did they connect China to England? And I mean, that's just a great question, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a brilliant, like it's a proper dynamite question.
She's thinking, well, hold on a minute. There's a supply chain of stuff that goes from England to China and China to England. And all of a sudden, she's curious.
And that's a great question. But if you put that in context of our salespeople, A, they don't have the innocence to get away with that. B, the buyers are too cynical about the questions they're asking. And C, very few salespeople are skilled enough to hide those two bits.
Yeah.
Really?
Page 83, Mike. I'm just going to have a little shuffle in my seat and get comfy here. Page 83. Empathetic salespeople behave as if they work for the client. The best salespeople we know get their clients because they dive so deeply. They speak their language, use their abbreviations, sometimes even adopt mannerisms and other cultural nuances when they interact with the client. My note says, ooh, let's be careful here.
Go on.
So I've talked about this on other shows. In digital health, I talk to clients about this all the time, which is that the salespeople do have that empathy and they do dive so deeply and they do speak the language and use abbreviations and they do sometimes even, as the book says, adopt mannerisms and other cultural nuances when they interact with the client. But they do what I call go native.
Yeah, I get you.
And actually, that empathy goes too far. And before they know it, they stop selling.
Because it's got to a point at which they close something and persuade someone.
Yes. And I think there's this point about that this book rams very heavy on empathy, passion for the customer, passion for the customer's customer. Great. It's bloody brilliant. But there's a line.
You make a very good point. Yeah, I like that.
Which is at some point, you got keeps. At some point, it has to be about you. It has to be.
Yeah,
it has to be about you.
That's what you're going to do.
Your boss's number. Your boss's number.
Yeah, I agree completely.
And you can get too empathic and not selfish enough. And I think that what they don't talk about enough in the book is the balance between empathy and downright disgusted self-centeredness. Does that make sense?
I think you make a very fair point. So let's say you manage me, for example, and I sell into digital healthcare and I'm trying to sell to Leeds NHS Trust, if that's even a thing. Who knows whether it is, because I don't know anything about healthcare. It might be a thing. And you say to me, listen, have you sold them that APR software? And I go, I'm just not sure really, Johnny, because I've really got under the skin of it. I think actually they shouldn't buy the EPR system from us. I think they should buy it from InterSystems.
Yeah, I think they should. I think it's a better fit to their needs. Like, right, okay.
I'm getting fired and you're quite likely going to fire me.
Yeah. You know, it's a solo sport is sales. I don't care what people say. It's a bit like the Ryder Cup, isn't it? So we've got the Ryder Cup coming up in a couple of weeks, which I'm really looking forward to.
Are the Liv people allowed to play?
I think so. But we've got the Ryder Cup coming up. Yeah. Hovland's hit in form. Rory's on fire. I'm excited about it. But you look at the Ryder Cup, right? Golf is a solo sport. I know the players will say, nah, I've got my coach, I've got my caddy, I've got my strength coach, I've got my shrink. It's a team game. No, it's not. Shut up. Fuck off. It's an individual sport. And it's a nasty individual sport. Any golfer who tells me that they've never stood on a green wishing for another man to miss a putt in a competition is a liar. We've all done it. It's nasty.
Actually, I play a lot of golf. You knew that.
It's nasty. You stand there going, come on, just miss it, bastard. We've all done it. And sales is the same. In the final analysis,
yeah,
it's you versus another guy.
Yes, it is, yeah.
And all this, it's a team sport.
And a lot of it is you versus the client.
Yeah. All that, right? And this is the point about that balance of empathy. It's got to be about...
Well, you know, I've got a client that I've done a lot of work with. Me and the chief exec have had a silly standoff. Yeah. Well, we haven't spoken to each other for 2 months.
Yeah.
And I spoke to him this week. He went, I don't know, mate. I thought you'd fallen out with me. I said, well, I had, actually. He went, why? I said, because I think what you're doing is wrong.
Yeah, and I agree with you.
I think you're wrong.
And it's at some point, it has to be selfish. Sales is a selfish game.
Yeah.
And we have, and I like this book, and I like what it's espousing. But actually, what I'd love to see somebody write a book about is Sales is a one... I'd like to see a book entitled Sales is a One-Man Sport.
Maybe you should write it.
Yeah.
With a team of people helping you out, like a golfer.
Correct. Like Rory.
Yeah.
Do you think Rory's sat there, come on, team, let's go and rifle one down the first.
Well, you know, I watch lots of Formula One and lots of IndyCar, and the first thing the drivers do is thank the team. Oh, you're so great. Thank you. Blah, 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 blah.
But they're not sat in the car, are they, at 200 miles an hour?
Exactly. Come on then, Johnny. You know I'm up for firing through this. What's your next point? I've written a lot of stuff down, but...
Customer journey mapping, liked that.
What page is that on?
On page 88, they talk about using customer journey maps. I really actually rather liked that.
Okay.
It's got me thinking a little bit.
Oh, this is the bit where they're talking about Starbucks, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What it's made me think about is the procurement we're doing. Actually, maybe I'd have been better giving them a customer journey map.
Maybe, but maybe they should have tried to work it out.
And I've actually written love that diagram. Then they're onto the acceleration thing. Accelerate. Storytelling recall. La, 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 la. Here we go. That's right. A few things about this story. Brevity. The storytelling. I know you don't like storytelling, do you?
I've written on this page. I've written one thing on the page before, actually. We often think of ourselves as closers, but in reality, we're change agents. I laughed at that and put a laughy face next to it. But then on storytelling, I put, Johnny's going to want to talk about storytelling. Yeah. I'm just not a fan of it, really. But then that's different.
You're a very literal person.
That's different strokes for different folks, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, so maybe, because you look after some of my candidates when I'm on holiday, I suspect it's like dealing with me.
Yes.
I suspect you go, something, oh, yeah, I can see why Mike likes this
bit,
guy.
Bit digital.
Hello. How'd you get on? Good. Do you want to take the job? Yes. Do you want any back chat? No.
Well, I've got a week of that coming up, haven't I?
All right. Bye.
I've got a whole week of that coming up and you go away.
Now, this thing, I thought this next bit, Johnny.
Chalk and talk.
Sketching. I thought this, best bit in the book.
Now, I'll tell you, what's been really interesting is as we've moved into our digital age and we don't go and see customers anymore. I've always done that. Always love to stand at a whiteboard and draw.
I don't use a whiteboard, but I do. You know, I draw the Venn diagram a lot.
Do you know what I do now with a lot of customer meetings is I have a Miro open with blank screen on my iPad. Then I can share Miro on my Mac.
I do similarly.
And I can whiteboard stuff with the clients during the meeting.
Yeah, well, I hadn't thought of doing that. So I use Apple Notes and share that screen.
Yeah, simple as. That's actually a lot more elegant a solution. But I just do it and I draw with my iPad. My iPad's connected to Miro, obviously, on the Mac. And then they can see me drawing and I can chalk and I can talk during the meeting.
They all ask me for a copy of it as well afterwards. They go, would you mind sending me a copy of that?
You probably draw the same Venn diagram over and over
and
again.
And they're saying, can you read my writing? They go, she don't care.
None of them care. And there's a great image here of where Mark Benioff did a...
Yeah, to Burberry.
A drawing with Burberry. And you're like, right, that's actual history, isn't it?
That's a top, you know, I completely agree.
Fair, you know, fair play is obviously a top sales.
So this bit then, so stop playing the forecast game.
Go on, what do you mean?
So page 121.
Yeah.
We're talking about design thinking, and it says, what does sell by design mean for managers? So you manage me.
Yeah.
Stop asking me about forecasts. No, don't, Johnny. We're selling by design. I've drawn some pictures. I've been empathetic. I've understood it. I've been on the bus. Don't worry about it. It's all just going to fall into place.
It's all going to be all right because I got the bus from...
And at this point...
God knows where to San Francisco or wherever it was.
I was on a Greyhound for 8 hours. And at this point, we're at page 121. It's very obvious that Ashley Welsh and Justin Jones have some connection to Salesforce. Who knows? Maybe they work there or... It doesn't appear so, but they've got some strong connection to Salesforce. And what Ashley is writing, assuming it's Ashley, she's going... Yeah, what does sell by design mean for managers? Just stop playing the forecast game. There's a game being played, the forecast game. It's what keeps salespeople internally focused. Managers are under pressure, so they're constantly hound employees. I don't think that flies for me.
I'm not buying that either. You know...
Do you know what forecasting is about? It's about putting pressure on salespeople. And do you know what salespeople need a lot of the time?
Pressure.
They need pressure.
We all need pressure in all sorts of...
And we're in this sort of new society. I put a post about stress, actually, on LinkedIn, where stress is bad and forecasting creates stress and forecasting is bad. putting pressure on salespeople is bad. I just don't think it is. I think that's what comes with the nature of being a salesperson.
Stress is good.
You want to earn 150 grand a year? Yeah. Somebody's going to put you under pressure about your forecast. I'm sorry, but that's going to happen.
And a lot thereof.
Yeah. Because you're going to, do you know what? You're 150 grand. Your sales manager might even raise their voice.
Yeah, because they're under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Because their bosses are under pressure, and their bosses are getting it in the neck from the shareholders at the AGM. And the shareholders are saying, where's my ROI?
Yeah.
And the investors are saying, where's my ROI? Where's our money?
Yeah, so this notion of sort of, she suggested about, you know, forecasts not being important, I think that's nonsense.
It's such a fine balance, isn't it? Because how much pressure, we've got two elements.
How much pressure was I under when I was 22?
Ridiculous.
How much pressure are you under managing me?
I used to put you under outrageous pressure.
Do you know what? I didn't die.
And I was under outrageous pressure.
Just loads of pressure all coming from the top.
Yeah.
But look, steel
is forged in fire, Mike.
But look, a lot of those people, they've done all right.
Steel is forged in fire.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit like this whole... something I find really fascinating about a lot of salespeople at the moment is they're all right going out and running an Ironman, but they don't want to be put under pressure at work.
Completely agree.
And I'm like, hold on a minute.
Oh, they're all into the martial arts.
Oh, I'm all right boxing. I'm all right getting it, but I don't want to be put under pressure at work. You can't put me under pressure.
It's bad for mental health. And I don't want to decry mental health. And by the way, listeners, Johnny and I have both been Samaritans. So let's be
clear.
We're
all about the mental health.
We've spoken to lots of people who are in a very poor form of very poor mental health.
But actually, I think that there's an element of we've gone too far with it all, and there is actually a balance. There's a biting point with all these things. There's a pressure biting point from a sales leader to a salesperson, and that's the art of great sales leadership.
Yes.
Is finding the pressure biting point of each salesperson. How much pressure can I and can't I put on this person? So, for example, Pete Boultby, if I gave him shit, he would just cease to respond.
Yeah.
When he worked for me. I knew I couldn't dig into Pete. I couldn't rip into Pete. I couldn't tell Pete off. Pete didn't respond to that. Pete responded to gentle pressure and support. But I had another manager who actually only responded to one thing. One thing alone, the stick.
Yes.
You could carrot the life out of him, didn't respond. And that's the art of sales leadership. It's the art of any leadership is knowing, okay, it's not a one size fits all. You can't just write in a book that you've got to stop pushing the forecast and start asking about whether they've been on the bus with Greyhound coaches. Actually, you've got to look at each individual salesperson in your team and think, how's this one going to respond? How do I get this one to play? And I think it's preposterous to write in a book something as glib and pithy as that.
What did you make of the book?
I've got final...
my final bit. I finished it ages ago.
Final comment.
Go on then.
This is my favourite bit of the book.
Okay. Better be good.
They talk about a sales leader at Salesforce who sent us his spreadsheet that he uses for managing his team.
Right.
One extra qualitative metric to capture the creative discovery method. So they're saying you should have in your spreadsheet that you use for managing your sales team, because you're a sales leader at Salesforce. Anybody kind of catching the irony here? That they're talking about a sales leader who works at Salesforce.
I get your point.
Who's using a spreadsheet to manage your team. Kind of denigrated every single point in the book for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't look at stuff like that. I just think, yeah, whatever.
Well, you're using Salesforce. The whole idea is you use Salesforce to manage the team, surely.
Is that your last point?
My last point is I thought the book was all right.
What would you give it out of 10?
If you sell an enterprise-level sale where the potential procurement is possibly mission critical to the client, you should read it. I actually prefer it as a paradigm to Challenger, and I can see why Rob recommended it.
Controversial.
I think it's a much better paradigm than Challenger. I think Challenger is dated horribly in And I've got a client at the moment where the job spec
is he needs to know Challenger.
Sales leader who must know Challenger. And actually what it made me think about a lot last night was, I must ring that client, have a word with him. This is a silly job spec, this, and I shouldn't have taken it off him. And actually, I'm going to sit him down and say, let's just break down what you really, really, really mean here. Because I've done a superficial job because I love the client and I just wanted to please him. And I was excited about getting a job spec. But I'm digressing. I think if you sell an enterprise level sale and it's a big sale and it really affects the way your client's businesses work, yes, I think it's actually a very good book. I think you'll read it in an hour at an airport and you'll walk away thinking, do you know what? Just going to rethink a few of the clients I'm working on.
Out of 10.
So if you are in that job, it's an 8. If you work at Mixpanel selling rapid fire orders to agencies and you are a junior AE, don't waste your time.
It's an interest reason for one of them, isn't it? Just an interest reason.
It's a 2.
Fair enough. I'm going to go with 6.5.
All round, you're not going to...
No, I mean, I do agree with you. I think it suits transformational sale 100%. Talking about just the book, I think this idea of selling by design, that's a clever idea. Actually, how many people are going to do it? Hardly any. Really? I just don't think people do it.
It's made me think about perhaps doing a little bit further reading on design thinking.
Gives you an extra 2% in your army, just an extra thought. And do you know what? In the next month, I'll talk to a client about design thinking at a prospect, and it'll hook the prospect in and they'll start dealing with me. So was it worth an hour of my time?
It's not hurt me and you. In the next month, you and I will talk about that book to some clients.
And they'll go,
and we'll talk about,
wow, you're a genius.
And it will make me and you more credible. I will gain a brownie point or two with a client somewhere along the line. Who will go, hey, do you know what? Johnny really does live in the world.
But you get a brownie point by having an opinion on Challenger, even if it's not favourable, because that's the whole point of Challenger.
I'm challenging Challenger.
Exactly. I thought the idea of drawing, now I am a terrible art. I got an E in GCSE art, and the teacher sniggered when I put my stuff on the wall.
Is that like when I swim, people snigger?
Yeah, probably similar. But I did think, I'm going to start doing that. I've actually been looking at Microsoft Whiteboard. I thought to myself, yeah, I could see myself doing that, actually.
In meetings?
Yeah. I think it's a really good idea. Drawing a poster.
Particularly now we don't meet as many clients.
You know, like this guy tomorrow, we're going to get talking about. He's going to say, where'd you get your candidates from? Whatever.
And you're going to map that out. You're going to map the journey.
Yeah. And he's going to go, oh, that's really cool.
Are you going
to... So I was going to say, 6.5.
Are you going to mystery shop your client before you go? Are you going to...
Nah, just rely on Glassdoor.
Right. So you're going to look in Glassdoor. What else are you going to do? Are you going... I don't know.
I'll tell you what I would do before I see my client.
Has it made you rethink how you'll approach that client meeting for tomorrow?
No.
Right. In that case, it doesn't score much, does it?
It scores 6.5 for me. Was it worth the 10 quid, yeah? Thought it was all right. We've read much worse sales books.
Oh, we've reviewed way worse
books. Like, that's better than Challenger.
Yeah, it's like I say, it's a better paradigm than Challenger for me.
I agree. No, and I'm not knocking the writer to say this, but it's obviously sort of self-produced or something, isn't it? And
self-published, yeah.
Yeah. No.
Like my shitty book.
It has that feel of it, similar quality, but you can't knock it for that because it's about the content, really.
Yes.
And Challenger's just better branded and the book's better and...
All that.
All that, carry on.
Yeah. And at that, we say thank you, goodbye, we'll see you next month, where we will soon release what book we're going to do next.